Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So if you were travelling, commuting on a Monday morning on your plane, your train, your automobile, and you're expecting the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, we apologise sincerely. We did one yesterday, me, Phil and Tim, where we discussed... Well, what did we discuss, Phil?
Lots of things. We discussed England-Wales in depth with some stats from Accenture.
Oh, we gave you a world exclusive on the new Bath Director of Rugby.
The potential new Bath Director of Rugby.
The new Bath Director of Rugby. And Tim had his very own Miles Benjamin moment. So let's try and revisit these in a bit more of a bite-sized pod. Hands in, pod on three, Phil.
One, two, three, pod.
Hello and welcome to another Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. I'm JB, there is no Tim, but thankfully there is a Phil.
Hi.
Hello Phil.
Hi JB.
Oh, well, what a disaster we have had.
So as you said in your little intro, we recorded a full podcast, an hour and 15 minutes of podcast yesterday.
Of hard work, toil, sweat, tears.
Yes, there were some tears at one point. And Tim, who was packing for his flight today to New York, tried to get it out, and due to a computer meltdown, I think he described it as, we have no podcast, or we lost a full podcast.
This has only ever happened once before, and... it couldn't have happened at a more inconvenient time. So all of our cables are packed up for the States. Our only talent has gone to the States. And it's just left with you and me holding the baby.
And I might add that it's now 25 to 11 on Monday night because of other other commitments. And this is how committed that me and JB are to actually get this podcast out. This was the only time we could do.
Well, at least we've had a wonderful week of rugby. However, I would suggest that the week's leading rugby story has nothing to do with rugby whatsoever.
Yes, I think you're probably quite right.
Now, if you don't know what we're talking about, this is the ludicrous suggestion, and it seems to be annual now. There seems to be a cycle, and every time there's a big rugby tournament, like Six Nations or the World Cup, how can I describe her? The awful, sexist, vile... individual that is called Alison Pollock comes up with more nonsense about rugby tackling. Maybe you should lead on this for a more balanced view of exactly what was said.
Okay, so earlier in the week, early last week, there was reported in all the major papers, doctors want to ban rugby for under-18s in schools.
Let's be very clear about this. They want to ban rugby because rugby without contact is basically netball. Now, there's nothing wrong with netball, and I would actually say netball is better than touch rugby. But rugby actually is nothing without its contact.
I'd slightly disagree on that point. I think it can be still a very good game, but it's not the same game, and you do lose a lot.
It's a completely different game.
You lose the essence of rugby. So the article was, doctors want to ban tackling in schools up to the age of 18, which raises lots of questions. It raises questions over the study. It also raises question over who these doctors are, because that is an issue in itself. Because I think they're being deliberately misleading with who these doctors are.
You're absolutely right. These doctors aren't medical doctors. They're PhD people. They're PhD people in subjects that shouldn't exist. For instance, sociology. This woman who has come out with this initial initial study, if you know, for want of a better word, it isn't medically motivated at all. It's politically motivated, it's socially motivated. Whatever it isn't about rugby. But here's where I come down hard on it. I don't want to go into politics of it because Tim's not here and he'd have a very different view. So all I'm going to say is this. If you take the aggression and the contact out of rugby, you're basically left with something which already exists in football or netball or something like that. And for a kid like me, when I was growing up, sorry, not a kid like me now, I'm obviously not a kid, but as a kid growing up, that release was very important. And if I behaved the way I did on a football pitch, the way I did on a rugby pitch, I'd probably be labelled a bad kid or, you know, a troublemaker. And it's really important that you understand that rugby is popular because it sort of encompasses and, you know, it's an outlet for this sort of behaviour.
Yes, I can see that. I can see that argument. And by taking away tackling up to the age of 18, you remove that. You also, in my mind, you actually create additional danger because there are a few statistics on tackling. They all show that technique is the most important because it's often the tackler who gets hurt because of poor technique.
Now, this is interesting, actually, because this shows me they really don't know what they're talking about. Because they keep talking about the tackler getting hurt, but they've never spoken about the tackled person getting hurt, as if that doesn't happen.
They do, but from the statistics that I've seen, it's more frequently the tackler and more frequently poor technique. And my issue with this is if you don't tackle until you're 18, then all of a sudden you've got big men after 18, much bigger, with no technique at all.
Imagine when you were 17, you get that first taste of senior rugby, and they just drop you off. Oh, go and play with the men.
Yes.
Until
that point, you've been touched, and then all of a sudden, you're thrown into the deep end.
It'd be a massacre.
It would be horrendous, way more dangerous.
Actually.
But one other point from this is, there's some people saying it's misguided, but it's raised an important question and something the RFU should be looking at. Well, the RFU are already looking at this. They've done extensive
absolutely.
And World Rugby. They do a huge amount of work.
These people surveys. I think it's important to note that these people are so far behind the curve. Their data is so irrelevant. It's simply out of date.
And I think they're misrepresenting some of the data as well.
100%. Because it isn't about sport, it's about politics and nothing more.
They're talking about a 28% chance of child injury in a game, which I just find as a bit of a nonsense. And I think there are some good articles from legitimate scientists and medical professionals disputing that fact.
Yeah, so if you're in any doubt, sociology is not a legitimate science or a legitimate medical degree. Please do not mistake it.
I wouldn't go quite that far, but
yeah, you would.
But this study, I think it's been really good actually because you've seen Rugby United against this study and everyone coming out and saying pretty ubiquitously that this is nonsense and it's potentially creating more danger and doing more harm than good. So that's positive to see.
I guess so. And also, if you want to see a doctor playing rugby, you might get the chance this weekend.
That's a great segue.
Oh, stop it.
Who needs Tim?
We need Tim.
We do need Tim.
So
that is a great segue into the England-Wales game.
Yeah, so before we go into the England-Wales game, we were contacted by Accenture, who's the official technology partner of the... Is it the RBS Six Nations still?
It is.
It's still despite RBS having no money, it's the RBS Six Nations still.
It is.
And they have produced for us what they consider... Am I right in saying this? Statistically, their best team.
That's exactly what they've done.
And we went to them with what we thought would be statistically our best team.
Yes.
Right, so
the three of us... piled our heads together and we came up with one team and Accenture looked at the cold hard stats and compiled what they think is the best team.
Right, okay, so let's go through what we said first.
So what we said was Mako Vunipola.
Okay.
Scott Baldwin and Dan Cole, although I disagreed with those two.
Right, I don't remember picking any of these players. It's usually how this usually happens is I say something, you and Tim say something else, and that goes. So I don't know how this has happened, but go on.
This was on WhatsApp, and you kind of joined in very late
to
the discussion.
Yeah.
So then we've got George Cruis and Alan Wynne-Jones, fairly straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Warburton and Justin Tipperick.
Right.
Although I wanted Rob Shaw and Warburton.
Okay.
We've then got Billy Vunipola, an obvious choice, Gareth Davis, Dan Bigger, George North, Jamie Robertson, Jonathan Joseph, Anthony Watson and Mike Brown.
Okay, so I think that's a fairly compelling team. You'd argue to say that they aren't the best players out of those two sides?
Yes, yeah. There's some definites, some you could argue a little bit. So the Essentia team.
Fire away.
So, we've got from number one, Rob Evans.
Okay, Evans, the Welsh prop.
The Welsh prop. Now, we said Marco Vunipola. Now, so, the difference...
How on earth have they got Rob Evans ahead of anyone, really?
Well...
I mean, I'm surprised he's even in the Welsh team. Do they weigh offloads in the first 10 minutes quite heavily?
Well, I guess he's only against Gethin Jenkins for the Welsh team, but in terms of...
Yeah, but even so, I mean, Gethin Jenkins in the loose is, you know, quite the prospect, his turnovers, tackling, his work rate.
Well, so this is from this Six Nations, and it's looking at tackle all the statistics, tackles, carries, passes, scrum successes, line-out successes, kicks, all the usual stuff. Now, Rob Evans happens to be the loose head who's played the most minutes.
Okay.
Therefore, right. He has also topped the statistics for carries and for passes and for all that stuff.
Hang on, now, I would assume, being the official technology partner for the Six Nations, they would automatically weight this.
Well, they haven't. So what I have done is I have weighted it myself.
Oh, my God, this is mind-numbing. Okay, fine.
So I have taken all the players, I've looked at how many minutes they've played in this tournament thus far,
mm-hmm.
and given them, adjusted their scores to take into account that fact, and it confirms that Marco Vunipola, minute by minute, is a better player than Rob Evans. But in terms of minutes played, Rob Evans has done more things in this tournament.
Right, okay, so he's done more things, not necessarily better things. Okay, fine.
Yes.
So
that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay, so who's next?
Okay, next, they've got Dylan Hartley.
That makes sense.
And Samson Lee, which also makes sense.
Okay.
Although Dan Cole has played all but 11 minutes in the tournament, which is quite interesting because...
That's really interesting, actually, especially for a tight-head prop.
The only game they took him off was against Italy when they were comfortably ahead. It's because Paul Hill has been behind him.
Now,
with Kieran Brooks coming back to fitness,
mm-hmm.
who may well be on the bench for the Wales game, I think you'll see a little bit less of Dan Cole and a little bit more of Kieran Brooks. Then in the second row, they've matched us with Cruis and Alan Wynne-Jones. The back row, they've matched me with Rob Shaw, Warburton and Billy Vunipola. No position for James Haskell. No position for Tipperick.
Hang on, James Haskell's not in there?
No.
Right, okay. So their seven is Tipperick?
No, their seven is Warburton.
Right, but he plays six?
But he has started at seven when Lydiot played.
Oh, right, okay, fine.
So eight is Billy Vunipola, who is the second highest scoring player overall, interestingly. Do you want to guess who the first highest scoring player is?
Who scores highest at doing everything? What a ridiculous stat. I have no idea. I have no idea how it's weighted. I'm going to say it is Rob Shaw or someone.
No. It's actually Gareth Davis. Interestingly.
Oh.
Now, I actually asked the question of Essentia. Can you give me the calculation? Because it surprised me. I didn't get the calculation, unfortunately. So I can only assume that passing is weighted quite heavily. Because Gareth Davis, he runs a lot for a scrum half.
Yeah.
But he's run half as many metres as, say, Liam Williams or Mike Brown or even Billy Vunipola. So that can't be the reason why. But I don't actually know the full reason.
So we know Gareth Davis is the best player, but we don't know why.
Yes, we know that he's the highest in the Essentia stats.
Brilliant. I can't wait to hear the rest of the team. Go on.
Then the back line is very similar to the one that we picked, or the rest of the back line. Dan Bigger, Jamie Robertson, Jonathan Joseph, Jack Knoll, George North and Jack Knoll. Jack Knoll just pipped Anthony Watson
okay.
for the wing spot. And then Liam Williams is about 2% better or scored 2% higher than Mike Brown. When they're time adjusted, they're virtually identical.
Okay. Well, let's hope we never do this feature ever again. And take what you have learnt from that and tell me, what do you actually think is going to happen in the real life game?
Well, from that, you don't learn very much. But what I then did was put these stats into an England and Wales team.
Ooh.
And Wales come out about 3% better across the board, even when adjusted for time. So
3% better. That, again, means very... Okay, so they're just 3% better than England?
According to the stats, in this tournament, they have performed 3% better, according to the Essentia data.
Quite incredible.
Now, obviously, England are playing at home, Wales are playing away.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't matter, as we found out in the World Cup. It doesn't matter if it's your home World Cup, if you're playing at home, it doesn't matter.
But they had Lancaster, who was a 10%, who made them 10% worse.
And we have Gatland, who makes us 50% better.
Oh, God, it's so confusing, all these statistics.
You would never have guessed that Gatland had the foresight to bring off his best playmaking centre,
yeah,
add an additional winger, bring on Reece Priestland, and then have the reserve scrum half fly hack it down the field,
yes,
for the starting scrum half to score, or something like that.
Genius by Gatland. He's a vision. The man is a visionary.
He's a brilliant man.
So if he can have a game plan like that again, do you think Wales can win? In all seriousness, as a Welsh fan, what do you think the chances are?
Well, I don't know. Simply, that is wonderful insight from a rugby podcast. But I don't. I think of it like this. My initial reaction is Wales can bully England. They can bully England because they're much, much more physical. They seem to be fitter. Now, I think that's a silly thing to say because they're all fit.
Yeah.
But I definitely think it definitely seems like Wales work harder. And I think that they're more organised. I think the Eddie Jones factor is going to be huge, though. I mean, gone is all this nonsense that we're going to be good people and do things the right way. No, they're just going to win. And they're a completely different prospect. So, although my initial thought is Wales can win, I think England will win.
I think I'm going to say I think England can win. I think one of the big areas, as we've highlighted on the podcast previously, is that England are so heavily reliant on Billy Vunipola for go forward. In the game so far, he's made 2, 3, 4 times more metres than the whole of the rest of the pack put together.
Yeah, but number 8s tend to do that. I mean, that's the other thing.
But the way he's been playing, he's got 2 Man of the Match awards. He's been absolutely superb. And he's been carrying men over the gain line. He's been half getting stopped. Like, there's 3 men tackling him every time. He gets half stopped and then he just keeps going. Well, against Wales, I think it's a different prospect because they will be able to target him more. They are,
but again, if you target
physical.
Him more, if you dedicate 2 players to him, you've got to assume that other holes will open up somewhere else.
I just don't see the threats from the pack for going through those holes.
Do you know what I would love to see, especially after this weekend, is Jamie George being given a shot because I love his running game.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, unfortunately, the captain plays hook. And I say unfortunately, he's a good captain.
Yep.
He's abrasive. He's exactly what England needs. But when you watch Jamie George play, you think, good carrier.
He's a great carrier. And he's an intelligent runner. He runs very intelligent support lines and he can offload. I'd like to see him. I'd like to see Mako start. I'd like to see a Todgy start. Just to get the carriers up and take some of the pressure off Billy.
You're going for a...
I'm going for... It's going to be less than 5. I think England can edge it.
Yep.
But I think if Wales really stop Billy, then... Wales can also do it. But if I was a betting man, I'd have to slightly back England.
I think England by 1 score of some sort.
Yeah. But, I'll go with that.
Okay.
Now, in the press, there's been quite a lot of talk of Manu Tuilagi coming in for this game. He's been elevated to the England squad. Do you think it's just pie in the sky, media talk, clickbait?
What, like 5 things you'll never believe Manu Tuilagi has done before? That kind of clip.
That kind of clip. Or...
You won't believe what Manu Tuilagi did next.
Started for England.
I think if you're an England fan, just be happy he's fit, be happy he's playing for Leicester, and do the right thing. Send him back, get him match fit, and use him in the autumn.
Yes.
In fact, even let him skip a summer tour.
Yes.
So that's my view on Manu. Whether England play the desperation card. Although, interestingly, one of the egg chasers, I'm not going to mention by name, but he's not here, thinks it could be Ben Teo who fills the England void. I can't wait for the next podcast to interrogate him further on this.
Not this weekend, this is. This is possibly on the summer tour.
Well, whenever it may be. No, I think Manu should be wrapped up in cotton wool and just let him play for Leicester, get his feet back and just see where he goes from there.
Yes, I mean, he scored a try on the weekend, but he wasn't sensational. He still looks like he's lacking a bit of match fitness.
Did anyone else get called up for the England squad?
Kieran Brooks is in there.
Yes, that's the one I'm thinking of.
And his big debut is in there now, because he's played the last couple of games.
He must get so annoyed with going back and forth to the England elite squad and then back to Exeter and then called up again. Oh, this is my big shot, and then back to Exeter.
Yeah. So not this time.
Okay, so what are your thoughts on Ireland versus Italy?
In Ireland, I think it's going to be similar storyline to the England game, actually. I think Italy will probably hold them for a lot of the game, maybe 50, 60 minutes. And then I think the fitness, the bench, the experience of Ireland will allow them to rack up a few points. So Ireland by 10, 15 points in the end.
Yeah, I think you're probably about right there. I do think Italy will come out strong. They've got some decent players and they've been playing better. I think Campagnaro has made a case for, you know, inclusion to team of the tournament.
I think
he's been absolutely superb.
He's playing very well.
But ultimately they're going to fail and they're going to get smashed in the last 60, I'd say.
The last 60? Or the last 20?
Yeah. The last 60.
The last 60. God, that could be a hell of a smashing.
France versus Scotland. Now, bearing in mind, you did say Scotland would win three games.
I certainly did, and I'm going to stick by that. So Scotland host France on Sunday, 3 p.m. And I think Scotland can do this. Now, I think
they can.
I say that for a few reasons. Scotland play some very good rugby, and France have been playing some pretty poor rugby, in all honesty. France don't seem cohesive. And also, I was flicking through the top 14 team sheets this weekend, and of the 23 players who played against Wales last Friday night, 15 of them played for their clubs this weekend.
That's outrageous.
It's astonishing, isn't it?
That is outrageous.
These guys, there was very few of them who played on the bench. Most of them played 80 minutes, 65 minutes, 72, 80, 65, 80, 80, 80, 80, 59. There's a couple of 20.
Hang on, you counted the minutes?
Well, I just recorded the minutes that they played. Just in case I need it for...
Just in case you needed that?
Yeah, just in case.
Very good, Phil. You're very, very committed.
That also, by the way, includes Antoine Burban, who was knocked unconscious by Sam Warburton last Friday. So I don't think he should have been playing.
Let the boys play. All right, Alison Pollock.
Yes, okay. But Jay, if we can just save one child, no matter the cost...
No, whatever the cost, just one child.
Just one child, yes.
You're absolutely right, Phil.
Thank you. The other one, did you see Sebastian Bezzi, who started on the bench against Wales, played the full 80 for Toulouse in their 21-all draw with Brive. Did you see the final play of the game?
No.
When Luke... Toulouse were 21-16 down. Luke McAllister goes under the post to score a try to make it 21-all. Sebastian Bezzi has the kick to win the game, and he takes it too close to the sticks and gets charged down.
Oh, my God.
Talk about schoolboy.
How close to the sticks are we talking?
Not far back from the 5-metre line.
Why not just take it to wherever you need, like the
halfway,
10-metre line?
Halfway line, it doesn't matter. You're directly in front of the...
He needs to be fired for that. I mean, that is actually a sackable... In fact, in your line of work, right, if you, I don't know, estimating some wood or whatever you do for a living, QS, or that's what you estimate wood.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
And you made such a horrendous error. Wouldn't you be, like, actually verbally... You'd be verbally warned, right?
There would be a verbal warning.
Gross misconduct?
Maybe not gross misconduct.
It's the equivalent of throwing away a contract.
A win. Yeah, it's equivalent of throwing away a win. So it's if I was trying to win a contract and my just sheer laziness cost that contract, then there would be
it's
serious...
It's like me ending a client meeting by flipping the table.
Thanks, guys. Shake hands.
Flip the table. Bye.
So, just on going back to Scotland, France.
See, that, right, if you want to look at French rugby and think, why is it not working, forget all the minutes they're playing. It's because they've got players like Sebastian Beze.
Who's just too damn lazy to kick properly.
God knows how he shows up to work every day and works out and trains and keeps in shape. He can't even be bothered going back the required distance.
An extra 2 metres.
On the last play of the game. It's not like...
Quite incredible. So, for all those reasons, I think that Scotland can beat France. Scotland's weakness will be their pack tyrant, and when the French bring on their monstrous reserves from the bench and start turning the screw like they did against Ireland,
that's code for JP Nell.
WP Nell.
WP Nell getting tired.
Yes, if WP Nell's got 80 minutes in those legs, then Scotland might be okay. If he's not, it could be an issue.
He is a ferocious scrummager.
Yeah.
Absolutely ferocious. I'd say that is an issue.
Yeah.
I'd also say Finn Russell is an issue.
Okay.
A magnificent player, one of my favourite tens in all the Six Nations, but he does have a tendency to do silly things at silly times and cost his team, whether it be last year with, well, I mean, I thought he got cheated out of two games, actually, for the tackle on Jonathan Davis, or this year when he got yellow carded.
Against Italy.
Yeah.
Yes.
He does have the propensity to blow up a bit. But if he stays on the field, hell of a player.
Yes, yeah, and could be win number 2 of 3 for Scotland this year.
Which means, who else will they beat?
Italy?
They
played
Italy. Ireland.
Ireland.
I can see that.
They could do. Especially with the injuries that Ireland have. So watch this space.
Okay. So back to domestic matters. What do we have in the Premiership this week? Probably best if you go through the scores as they occurred.
Yes, let's do that. So Friday night we had the relegation battle.
Oh, which Tim went to.
Tim did go to that. Did he have any interesting stories?
You got very nervous talking to Dean Ryan.
Dean Ryan, he interviewed his hero.
I know.
His absolute hero, Dean Ryan. I don't think he mentioned the relaxation rooms.
No.
And I don't think he propositioned Dean Ryan.
Well, I'm, as nervous as he would be to meet Dean Ryan, I'm sure he remained a complete and utter pro.
So as always.
All we'd have is great interview questions.
Yes, absolutely. Did you see in the game, the warm-up to the game, you know, because the BT Sport, the brilliant broadcaster BT Sport,
wonderful.
Get access to all areas, the camera went into the Worcester dressing room just as they were having their huddle before the game was about to kick off. And as they go in, there's a little toilet to the right-hand side down this corridor on the way into the dressing room. And there was one of the Worcester coaches was stood in the toilet having a pee.
It is.
And as the camera panned back out, he was turning round and like doing up his fly, rolling a newspaper under his arm.
Oh, okay, first question is, why has he got a newspaper?
He was rolling up some stat sheets, maybe.
There you go.
Ben Kay and Hugo Monier were loving it. Absolutely adoring it.
I am amazed, right, that this doesn't happen more often. And, you know, being candid, if I was a relatively well-equipped rugby player, I don't think I'd ever be off-screen. you're asking for trouble filming in a changing room.
Yes. It's dangerous, isn't it?
It most certainly is. So the game itself...
Well, Andy Goode was... there was talk of him not being fit before the game.
It's all relative, I guess.
Well, not being fit injury-wise. I don't think there's ever been any doubt over his fitness, level of physical fitness. And he didn't actually look fit. He was hanging back and not controlling the game very well. He wasn't coming in and playing first receiver as often as he should
do. He plays a flat ball as well as anyone in the Premiership.
Yes.
You know, he might not be there as often as some other fly-offs in the Premiership, but when he is there,
yeah,
damn good player.
Yes. So I think Newcastle missed that kind of control, and they took him off after 50 minutes or so, and Willis, the reserve fly half, had a kick to win the game and missed it, put it wide. Not the most difficult kick, although it was pretty blustery.
I think Worcester are a very good team, actually. They're probably one or two players away from being a mid-table side.
It's quite interesting. When Goode first went to Newcastle, they won kind of 3 out of 4 games. Now that Worcester have got Hughard.
How highly do you rate him? Because some people are saying he is masterful. I wouldn't go that far, but he's a good player.
The stuff I've seen in the past, he can be a bit unpredictable. Not like a...
There's no Pienaar.
Pienaar or Dupria. Mm. Not like those kind of players. But he's fast. He's played on the wing. He's a dangerous runner. And his skills are good. So if he can calm things down and control a little bit more, which is what that team needs, especially with a young guy.
So you're
like,
saying he's a wonderful player, just not the player that team needs?
Well, I'm saying he's possibly... So he's got the experience, and if he uses that in the right way and not plays less erratic and more controlling...
Matawalu's got experience.
Matawalu does. He's more difficult to calm down.
Yes.
But he's played 2, they've won 2 so far. So whether that's a long-term change or it's a short-term bounce or it's just been the games that he's played, we'll see. But it looks like a good acquisition to help them into the end of the season.
So if you're a betting man now, it's a 3-way struggle. Irish, Worcester, Falcons, you go with?
Irish going down.
I'd say Irish going down, unfortunately, which brings us nicely on to London Irish Bath.
It does, and Irish have got their own acquisition. Greg Tonks, who started on the bench because... Theo Brophy Clues.
Joffrey Clause.
Started. And there's not too many positives, I think, that Irish can take out of this game. Bath, on the other hand, actually started playing some good running rugby.
Yeah.
Wingers scoring. Pack looked powerful. But it's how much do you read into it against London Irish?
You know, I mean, anyone who's listened to podcasts in the past knows I'm a huge fan of Bath. Everything from the magnificent kit to the best sporting town in the world, with the best sports stadium in the world, bar none.
And the best and the best captain and the best owner.
Yeah, all those things. I absolutely love Bath. But they basically played the role of the bully here. They beat a team who aren't very good. And at the end, it was heartbreaking to watch Tonks miss that kick.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing in it for Bath, you know. It's just a way that Bath win and Tonks get something out in the end. And to miss it was just,
The kick would have secured a losing bonus point, which could be vital. Although, as we said before, I'm not sure it will be. I think London Irish.
Do you think there's an element here of maybe throwing up the white flag and saying enough's enough? We're not going to stay up. Let's see what the kids have got.
I don't think they've got any options at the moment. I think they've got some good young kids. I mean, Johnny Williams, who's coming to the inside centre and who's keeping Shane Geraghty out, he's a very handy player. He's a very talented player. They've got injury problems elsewhere in the front row, like losing Ben Franks.
It tells you all you need to know about Geraghty, that he's not getting any game time at all, despite London Irish being bottom of the table and playing 2 18-year-olds.
Yes, yeah, 18 at 10 and 12. It will be interesting to see if Tonks does have a more controlling effect going forward.
Okay. Before we move on,
okay. We
might need to kind of slowly go off into something we discussed in the main podcast. Which is going to be difficult now, because Tim came to us with some news, which he got directly from Neil Fissler. He did. Yeah, Neil Fissler broke it first.
Okay. Sorry. Yes. Yes.
So... this news was, apparently, Tim knows who the next Bath director of rugby is?
He knows who they're lining up to be the next Bath director of rugby. So this is not, they're not firing Mike Ford, or Tim doesn't know whether they're firing Mike Ford, but he believes someone is being talked about. Yeah, groomed kind of gives it away a little bit.
Would you like to try and... I nearly gave away the name there. I'm not going to say it. Okay, so the game we played on Sunday evening was guess the director of rugby, who the next one's going to be.
Yes.
So Tim very kindly put it on WhatsApp for us, and me and Phil got thinking, and we came up with a list of candidates. So let's go through our candidates. We thought it might be Gatland.
Gatland was one. I suggested maybe Sean Edwards.
Yeah.
Going for a coaching role. We spoke about Conor O'Shea.
Which would make a lot of sense. Brilliant director of rugby.
Yes. And then you were mortified to think that the Vandal...
Ugh, Stuart Lancaster. Can you imagine? So, no, thankfully it's not Stuart Lancaster.
And then we also said maybe someone from Super Rugby, someone like Dave Rennie.
Now, that would be a lovely appointment. I mean, you know, if you like flowing... No, actually, I'm not going to say flowing rugby, because it's nonsense. All this nonsense about the Southern Hemisphere teams being so talented and so much better than us, I don't buy it for a second. In fact, anyone who watched Super Rugby this week, in particular the New Zealand games, would say what an inferior product it is. But we'll save that for another time. He would be a good appointment because he's a fine coach.
Yes.
The other one was...
Ooh, I can't
who remember. Else do we have on there?
There was one of the... Oh, Diamond.
Steve Diamond. So, Tim is teasing us. I went through the full range of emotions from horror, it could be Stuart Lancaster, to absolute ecstasy. I can't say it now.
Ecstasy.
Ecstasy and delight. That would be Steve Diamond. Dimes. Steve Diamond, they clear up Europe, domestic... World Club Challenge, if there was one. Super League.
Six Nations.
Yeah. Super Rugby.
All of it.
But I don't think they're that forward thinking. So the name that Tim gave us was...
Incredibly, Stuart Hooper.
That's amazing.
That is... Now, this comes back to the groomed element, which Tim didn't tell us initially, but we kind of found out later. According to Tim, it's true that they're looking at Hooper... as a potential future Bath director of rugby.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Because he's already got the links and...
Yeah. So I read this when Tim originally said it as, this is going to happen ASAP. that's what I thought. But again, that wouldn't really make much sense because... You're putting a player in charge of really experienced men and very good coaches like Tony Booth, Neil Hatley.
Yeah.
And presumably ahead of Mike Ford if you retain him.
Well, yeah. I mean, but this is all hypothetical future potential. Tim was very, very clear about that. This is all...
No, he wasn't clear about hypothetical. No, he never said hypothetical. He said this is the next one, but we don't know the time frames.
Okay.
So there's obviously various other questions here, such as...
When does Mike Ford get fired?
When does Mike Ford get fired? Because he has to get fired, right? You have to get fired for another director of rugby to come in.
Yes.
And how awkward is it to have your director of rugby related to your star player?
I think what they could do is move... So Mike Ford kind of moves up a half a level, if that's even possible.
But isn't the whole point of director of rugby to have like two coaches? So you've already bumped up the coach you don't want.
Yeah.
Where's he going to go next?
Well, so what you could do is you move...
Chief exec or something?
Well, you move Stuart Hooper into the first team head coach and move Mike Ford slightly up to the Gary... What was the Gary Gould role?
Oh, Bath have done this before, of course, haven't they?
Yes, they've got great history
of
doing
this. So
chief
executive... Director of Rugby.
Yes.
Manager of Elite Rugby Operations.
They might as well just call him Gary Gold Mark II.
Gary Gold Mark II. Yeah, that's not a bad shout, actually.
And then Hoops comes in.
It does make you think. I don't think it's the right thing to do initially. I think it's probably best doing what they did with Borthwick and letting him learn elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, they always say with family businesses, not that you care about family businesses, I don't know why I thought I'd bring this up, but they always say, you know, if you're going to bring someone into your family business, get them trained outside of the family business first.
Have you ever... This is going completely off topic.
Fire away. No one's here to stop us.
If Tim was here, I would not even raise this, but have you ever read about The History of Family Business in Japan.
Yes, I have.
It's incredible.
And the adopting of...
Yes.
Yeah.
So they all these businesses have, like, they pride themselves on being 400 years in the same family. But these days, the CEOs, they try and bring their sons up, but very, very frequently, like 98% of the time, their sons or daughters don't cut the mustard, and they just adopt someone else who's a prime candidate to be the next CEO and run the family business.
So you're saying it should actually be Danny Diamond, not Danny Cipriani? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Or if Mike Ford's going to be fired, maybe it's going to be, hang on, George Bruce.
Ah.
That's how he does
it. So Craig Bruce adopts George Ford.
George and... Bruce.
Wow.
Nailed it.
Brilliant. These people get adopted at the age of like 28 or 35, that kind of age.
I can actually see this because, Craig Bruce is an incredibly short man, as is our sponsor, Cornerstone.
Oh, another...
Stop it,
razor
Phil.
Sharp.
Stop it.
Razor sharp segue, JV.
Thank you to Cornerstone, who have been supporting the show over the last few weeks. We are honestly delighted by the amount of people that have signed up, got involved, ordered their razors online. If you don't know who Cornerstone are, you're about to find out now. They are an online razor delivery service. So you no longer have to worry about, you know, where's my latest, I don't know, end of the stalk going to come from, and wondering, you know, what fits what and all the rest of it. No, in fact, it just gets delivered straight to your door. And you get a finely machined aluminium handle with your own initials on it.
It's very well balanced. The weight of the handle.
So nothing, well balanced.
There's nothing worse than those plasticky razors that they're just dead flimsy. You need a good sturdy shaft in your hand, don't you, Jay?
Oh, 100%. 100%. It reminds me of, do you know, like Game of Thrones thing? When they grab the sword for the first time, the well balanced sword.
A Valyrian steel sword.
Oh, imagine. Imagine. So, what you need to do is you need to go on to cornerstone.co. Was it .co.uk? I don't even know.
Cornerstone.co.uk.
I'm so tinpot, I don't even know. Either go /eggchasers, or even better, just go to the checkout, type in egg10, use our code, you get a tenner off. And also, you get to fund the rugby dungeon, which, you know, is an honour in itself.
It is.
And one last thing, you also get to put your own initials on your handle. I suggest you put JB, but you can put whatever you want. In fact, if you do it, I might send you some stash.
Now, Jay, I had a shave this morning.
Okay.
From Cornerstone, so a few hours ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're probably the best man to compare. Have a feel of that.
Hang on.
Yeah. Now, is that or is that not smoother than your own baby's bottom?
I hate to say it because she could be an earshot, but that is smoother.
Thank you. Thank you. That's...
Mind you, what's she like, 7 weeks? They don't know anything, do they? That's
no.
Stupid.
I thought you were going to say 7 weeks. She's probably a bit stubbly by now.
No. My baby will never be stubbly because I subscribe to Cornerstone. I can shave her whenever I want.
Very good. Very good. Right, back to the Premiership. We should probably go through these games a little bit faster.
No, do it at our own time.
Okay. Sale Sharks versus Quins. Now, I went to this game.
Wow.
I went with...
Sale at home, yeah?
Sale at home.
Okay.
It's a little bit difficult getting out of the car park at the end.
Yep.
But an entertaining game, particularly the second half, where there's some good tries by both teams, actually. Will Addison, in particular, impressed me. But good game all round.
Anything in particular stand out?
It was interesting. I was with my girlfriend, who doesn't really follow rugby. Her father, who does follow rugby, and my girlfriend's mother and her sister as well, who definitely do not follow rugby.
No.
They're more music, arts, crafts, textiles.
We've all got our perversions.
Exactly. It was interesting from the non-rugby watchers. They commented completely unprovoked about how long it was taking for the stoppages in play. So there's a lot of reset scrums, and also the kickers, I know they were both the second choice kickers that started, but they were taking like 90 seconds every kick. It was a long time. So that was a little bit disappointing, but they enjoyed it overall, enjoyed the a bit of the free
atmosphere, quote unquote.
Atmosphere. They did, because they're all quite musical. They thought it was absolutely hilarious that all of the sail chants use sail as two syllables rather than...
Hang on.
So sail is one syllable.
Yes, okay.
So they do like, hey Jude.
Nah, oh no, don't sing it. Nah, don't sing it. Don't sing it.
No, 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 no.
Sail.
Yeah, they thought they
that's
thought that
awful,
was,
actually, isn't
and
it?
And sail.
Yeah, but you could just go, sail.
Yeah, it's so,
that's not too bad.
It's so stupid.
As I pointed out before, I'm amazed that Sail haven't just dug up some old footage from somewhere, because there's so many, you know, anthems and jingles just from actual sales on TV. January sales, you know, Christmas sales.
Well, they play.
There must be something out there they can use.
They play AWOL Nation Sail, which I know Tim doesn't like it.
No, I've heard them come out to this, and I thought
I
it was
like
weird.
It. I quite like it. It's quite a bit rocky.
It's a bit slow rocky, isn't it?
Yeah, I quite like it as a song. So anyway, so that was entertaining.
And also, I predicted that. I think.
Sail at home.
Yeah, but there again, no one loses out more than Harlequins during the international break, because their internationals are so important to the way that they play.
Yes, and no one gains more than Sail, because they don't have any internationals.
Exactly.
And everyone else loses them, so...
And they've got probably the best coach in the entire league, whereas Harlequins, you know, if you've been honest, it looks like they've checked out. It looks like they've checked out because their director of rugby's gone. Now,
no,
that might be unfortunate.
I think that's unfair. I think it's just it's the Six Nations their hardest hit.
Mm. Well, we'll see when they come back.
Yes.
It'll be a very good test.
An interesting thing from the sideline, which you won't have seen, well, you won't have seen on TV because the game wasn't televised, but you wouldn't have seen on TV, was Kyle Sinclair started the match and Adam Jones was on the sideline, but not on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Jones was constantly talking to Sinclair about the scrimmaging. He was constantly signalling and talking to him and trying to get messages.
How much can you watch Adam Jones when you're getting folded in half? It's a... Okay, well, I guess it's a use of Adam Jones.
It is, yeah.
It's a very expensive use of someone who just talks to someone else.
It is.
But, okay, fair enough. Gloucester Wasps.
So, low-scoring game.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of good tries, one by Hibbs, who crashed over, and a hell of a try by Christian Wade.
Oh, yes, I've seen this try. My word, he's dangerous, isn't he?
Yes.
Oh, good Lord.
Give him an inch and he'll take a mile.
He is comfortably the most scary Englishman to face up against.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I do. He can break tackles. He needs, like you say, just the smallest space.
But you know,
when he goes, he really goes. You can't catch him.
So Watson is a hell of a player as well. And Jack Noll is playing very well. But Watson also has the defensive ability and the positioning, and he's got a good boot on him.
Do you know what? I get what you're saying. You think he's a better rugby player, but I don't think he is as naturally talented. He might be as good at a natural athlete, but I don't think he has the balance. And
yeah.
Certain...
It's a low centre of gravity that Wade's got as well. So like for that try, I think there's two or three attempted tackles, and they just slipped off him. And... They couldn't make it, and he just keeps going in his stride because he's got that low centre of gravity.
Don't get me wrong, it's like saying Kelly Brook is less attractive than Beyonce or something like that. You know, they're both magnificent women. However, I just think that, me and Christian would get on better. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah, we'd have more in common.
So the other game on the Saturday, Saracens lost at home to Northampton, which I believe Tim predicted last week.
I think he did as well, in fairness to him.
Yeah, fair play, Tim. Did you actually see the end of this game?
No.
So, well, early on, Ben Spencer got a yellow card for killing the ball at a ruck 5 metres from his own line, which was fair enough. But Northampton capitalised on that. Northampton played some good rugby there. Backs played well. But the last minute, Saracens had the ball in their own 22. They're 5 points down. And Niels Mort decides to kick it into touch and end the game. Much to the frustration and annoyance of all of his teammates.
Why? Why did he do that?
I don't know. I can't explain it.
Hang on.
So Saracens have the ball in their own 22, admittedly.
Yes, okay.
But they have the ball, they're within 7 points, so they can win the game, and he just boots the ball out. Game over. Done. And all of his players were up in arms.
I would be up in arms.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd be absolutely up in arms. Right, interesting.
Interesting, very
interesting. So do we think that Northampton have turned the corner now and they're actually going to be something like the Northampton that we saw last year?
Yes, I think they are. I think they're building towards it. Their backs in particular have impressed me, and Harry Malinder is one of the most impressive. He's come on leaps and bounds. Well, I say he's come on leaps and bounds. I've never really seen him before.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's just good, maybe.
Yeah, just a good player. But Luther Brell has come on as well. Luther Brell's distribution game seems way better than it was 3 months
ago.
Yeah,
it's really interesting to say that, because you're either a good distributor or you're a bad distributor. You very rarely see a player that comes into the league early doors and go, oh, he's a terrible distributor. And by the time he finishes, he's world class. Well, or even better, yeah, actually.
We know that when Luther Brell didn't make the initial England squad, that Eddie Jones has had word with him. So I just wonder what he's told him to work on, whether Luther's fed that into Alex King, and whether they're, or Eddie Jones has fed it into Alex King, and they're actually, they've actually been working on it.
Quite possibly.
Whatever the catalyst is, it does appear to be working.
Excellent. Exeter Leicester?
The final game of the weekend on the Sunday. Another good game, high scoring, 31-27 to Leicester. But Leicester kind of, cagey first 20 minutes. Leicester scored, I think, one try before half time, and then I think three just after half time to really stretch the lead and go 20 points up. But Exeter came back into it. A couple of good tries towards the end, and finished 31-27. Now, there were a couple of controversial moments in this. From an Exeter's point of view, they had two yellow cards. Leicester had one. But there was a penalty try against Exeter, and I think they would have wanted to see consistency, the law being applied consistently, which I don't... I think there's an argument that it possibly wasn't. But it was a good game, and for Exeter to go away, and I think they only got one losing bonus point. But
I think if you're Exeter, right, you can pipe down about an unlucky result here or there after their European Cup qualification. You know, they've had all their luck in one go. Take it, enjoy it, but don't whinge when it goes against you, because you're in the European Cup quarterfinals through one of the most amazing sets of circumstances ever to grace European rugby.
Yes.
So, and did Exeter have all of their England contingent playing?
They had Big Dave Ewers. They had Sam Hill. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they didn't have Henry Slade. They had Jeff Parlin playing. And was Waldron playing? I don't think he was.
I wouldn't call him an England player, though, would you?
Well, he's got England caps. He's not a current England player. No, I think Don Armand started.
Ah, excellent. So from Big Day viewers, we go to the Big Apple on Thursday.
JB, what? Have you pre-written all of these?
No, of course not. It just
rolls off the tongue.
It rolls off the tongue. I'm a natural. Do we have our agenda close to hand? Now, it's very important to note, the reason that Tim isn't here is because he's very kindly volunteered to go before us, so we don't have to find all the bars and clubs ourselves.
Yes, it's a tough gig to do recon for nights out in New York, I'm sure.
It's times like this, you really value him.
Yes.
Really value him. So on the Thursday we're landing there, we're doing some stuff with both the teams, I believe, whoever they allow us to talk to, if anyone.
Yes, the plan is to meet them. They're doing a media gig in Times Square.
Oh, nice.
a couple of hours after we land. So we're hoping to get across to that.
Get a few selfies done.
Yes, definitely.
Friday, captain's run, but then Saturday is when the actual business end of the trip happens.
Yes, and by business end you mean the rugby rather than the drinking.
Yes. Well, yes.
Yeah, both.
So we'll be going to watch the So is it England game first?
No, it's the Ireland-Italy game first, which will be about 8 a.m., 7:30 a.m.
Now, I think we're watching that in a pub called The Australian, if we can get there in time, which is going to be questionable. But we're definitely watching
So it's the Saturday morning.
Yep.
And so we'll just have an early night on the Friday night. We'll have a very early...
Very early night. I've got a book.
Yes, yeah. I've got a couple.
Have you ever read it, House of Lancaster?
I've not. It was your Christmas present for
me.
Yeah,
House of Lancaster. And if I finish that in time, I'll read Henry's Pride. Or
I'll tell you what book came up on my Amazon suggested books this week.
Fire away.
Blackie, the Steve Black story.
Oh, I bet that's awful.
I bet it's horrendous.
I bet that is the worst book ever written.
I know.
I reckon it goes that and then Mein Kampf.
The 1A. Surprisingly, I didn't order it.
Whose book is Finding My Feet?
Finding My Feet. I don't know.
Do you know what? I've come up with a great game, and then we might play us on the next podcast.
Book titles.
Finding My Feet, I believe, is Jason Robinson.
Ah, clever.
And that's the only one I can remember.
Good.
I'm not a big reader.
Me and My Big Mouth.
Austin Healey.
Yes.
Yes, have that.
Because that was Tim's Christmas present.
Was it?
From me. Oh. When I bought you both books, remember?
Vaguely. So we'll be with the Bayonne Rugby Club to watch the England-Wales game at 10 o'clock somewhere.
In the Pig and Whistle, is it? In Hoboken?
Somewhere. I'll be there. I'm just going to be led by Phil and Tim, and we'll see you there. If anyone's around to have a drink, please make yourself known. And actually, just buy me a drink. Just buy me a drink. Or give me cash. I'm open. I'll buy a drink with it later. Who knows? Don't mind.
And we're hoping to record a pod on the Sunday, which can go out in time for your commute on the Monday. However, given that we failed to record a pod in our usual surroundings this Sunday just gone, we'll see.
It's going to be our least coherent pod to date. So
Yes, the Sunday morning after that Saturday will be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be going south quick, just like our rugby. Southern Hemisphere news now. Super Rugby's back up and running. Did you see any of the games?
I saw a couple. I saw the Highlanders Hurricane game, which was awful.
Really were the most terrible games.
I say awful. It was very exciting, but both teams looked a little bit clueless and like they were trying to run everything from anywhere. Without much thought as to what was on inside them, what was on outside them, what the defence was like, where on the field they were.
I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt here, which is I'm hoping they are like this just because all the best players have gone. They're at the start of a World Cup cycle, and by the end of the season, we're going to say, that guy's good, that guy's good, that guy's good.
Yes.
And we're going to see some progression.
Oh, we will definitely.
You'd hope.
We will definitely see that, which is probably ominous.
The team which I'm going to be following this year, because I'm a Glory supporter, will be the Jags. However, I am thoroughly unimpressed with them. I'm kind of impressed, I'm kind of unimpressed.
It's entertaining.
Yeah. So, they're massive playboys.
Yes.
Which I absolutely love. You know, they turn off their phones by shooting them, that kind of thing. So that's cool. I'm not keen on this ultra offloading game. What's your view?
It's very high risk for me.
It is.
And I'm not sure how sustainable it is.
Oh, I'm going to say it's not sustainable.
Yeah.
Because they beat a terrible team in the Lions. No. Cheaters, sorry. And then they lost their last game.
To the
using
Sharks.
Exactly the same tactics, including the very unusual tactic of getting two men yellow carded at the same time. I mean,
yes.
That is novel.
That is, if you're going to try and win games, that's a difficult approach to take.
So I don't want to spend too much time on the Super Rugby because we've got less important things to address, such as the Pro 12.
Well, the only thing I will say, the Brumbies, who were the other team I watched, I said I thought they looked good last week. I think they look very good this week. They beat the Hurricanes last week convincingly, and they beat the Waratahs this week convincingly. So Brumbies, based on what I've seen so far, are my pick. Also, the Lions seem to be doing some good things. They went to the Chiefs and won.
Yeah, that's a good result. But again, all the Chiefs of last year or the year before, maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
I will agree with you on this, which I think the Australian Conference this year is going to wipe the floor with everybody. Absolutely everybody. Brumbies look superb. Waratahs are strong. The other three can take or leave.
Reds have just lost their coach because he had a 28% win. He took over the championship winning team in 2013.
When's he just lost him? When did he go?
He went today. Today or yesterday.
How on earth do you let a guy get this far?
Two games into the new season.
They deserve everything that they get then.
Well, they got beaten comfortably at home by Western Force, so that's not a good sign.
Now, the coach before this coach was Ewan McKenzie.
Yes.
I assume he doesn't have a job.
Yes, I'll go with that.
Maybe two and two together. There you go. Someone's going to email us now or tweet us saying, you guys have no clue about Super Rugby. He's actually in charge of the Brumbies and doing a marvellous job. I don't know. I don't pay attention.
Right. You mentioned the Pro 12.
Unfortunately, I did, yes. Right, now just tell me the only result that, that matters and how did Connacht do?
I think you mean Ulster.
No, I mean Connacht.
Dominated a tiny horse you can't even ride.
A tiny spineless horse whose main form of defence is to hide among other spineless tiny horses. Brilliant.
Hide amongst barcodes.
Yeah.
We dominated them 32-0. But the game you're referring to, Connacht travelled to Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
Not the easiest place to go. And won 28-23.
Hear me now, believe me, the only team that matters, everyone else is some sort of, you know, franchise of the national team, self-entitled prima donnas playing in a rubbishy league, beating up on even more rubbish opposition like Zebra or whoever it is. Connacht are the only team that actually matter in the Pro 12. So from now on, we'll do the Connacht score, we'll do the Connacht prediction, and then we'll just move on.
28-23.
Brilliant. And who have they got next game?
They don't have a game next week because there's a rest week.
That's the end of the Pro 12. What are your predictions for the Aviva this week, Philip?
Well, before we do that, just one thing worth mentioning that we did yesterday. Did you see any of the Vegas Sevens?
I saw none of it, weirdly.
Fiji won.
Right, good.
At the end, in a good final against Australia.
Mm-hmm.
There's some good rugby played. But interestingly, there's a lot of kind of premium players, proper 15s players, who have been drafted in to the sevens ahead of the Rio Olympics this year.
Now, I have a question for you. Do you think this is a worthwhile pursuit for a national team to go after their biggest 15 stars to play sevens?
Depends who it is.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Habana and Hugard for South Africa.
But Habana is like a 30-year-old winger who, yes, he's still very good, but is he the best sevens player in the world?
Well, he looked quite good. He looked quite good. We'll see, but those two could be good examples. Sonny Bill and Liam Messam going for Crikey. New Zealand, I'm not so sure about.
What's Sonny Bill going to do? Prop or?
Yeah, yeah.
It makes sense.
And Liam Messam.
Yeah, yeah.
And Quade Cooper and Henry Spate has been talked about for Australia. They could be two handy ones.
Definitely Henry Spate.
Although Quade Cooper dropped the ball on the Fiji, Fiji try line. Fiji went 100 metres to score from it.
I tell you what, if Australia wants to have a really exciting sevens team, pair up Joe Tamani with Quade Cooper and you're either going to lose by 100 points or win by 100 points. There's going to be nothing in between.
Yeah. Well, so the question is, should GB do it? Do anything? So it's obviously GB for the Olympics, so it's England, Scotland, Wales, should be Northern Ireland, but I don't believe any of the Northern Irish Ireland players can because they're contracted to the IRFU.
Okay. Now, I would say this. Fundamentally, sevens has changed beyond all recognition to just a smaller version of 15s. It's not that. It's its own specialist sport. It deserves its own specialist respect in that regard. Secondly, I think it's a young man's sport. I don't think there's much room for people who have been conditioned to play 15s and are coming back into it age 30. I think you need to be conditioned from the start, and that's got to be your main sport for a couple of years on the circuit. So I'm going to be proved horribly wrong, but I believe that the best thing the home nations could do is pick the guys that have been on the circuit for a long time. If you've got a Ben Gollins type,
yeah,
that is who you should pick.
Yeah, and they've got a few. They've got like Dan Bibby, who's a bit of a playmaker.
Mm.
There's a few players in the Premiership I would like to see. Like Christian Wade, when he played in the Premiership Sevens, broke the try-scoring record. And I think without much additional conditioning, he could be very, very handy.
I think the players that you're going to find for the Sevens are going to probably be from the English sides more than the Welsh sides or the Welsh national side. And the reason I say that is, again, I'm kind of reinforcing the point I've just made, but it's conditioning. That Welsh team, there's not really a huge, bags of pace in there. Whereas I think you could probably go through the Aviva and find more suitable players than you could in the Pro 12.
Yeah. Maybe. There's a few Scotland players who'd be interested, like Hogg. Hog Seymour Bennett.
I think have I seen Hog play sevens? I'm sure I have. Oh yeah, in the Commonwealth.
Oh yeah.
And I'm thinking of people in Wasps as well. People like Elliot Daly, Robson, Simpson.
Yes. You know, Simpson.
Gareth Davis, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah. Or Reece Webb.
No, I think you should pick sevens players to play sevens.
Hmm.
Or rugby league players, because do you remember when Wigan won the Middlesex sevens?
Yes. And Sam Tompkins a few years ago said, well, it's not rugby union sevens, it is rugby sevens.
He's absolutely right. Yeah. He is right.
I mean, it is based on rugby union, but it is just rugby sevens. And there's no reason why Sam Tompkins, for example, or another rugby league player couldn't play that sport.
Yeah, and also you've got to remember that when Wigan did win it, they basically beat a bunch of dentists. You know, they were professional full-timers and everyone else was everyone else.
Yeah.
So let's have our predictions and let's wrap this up.
Sounds good to me. Okay. So we've already done the Six Nations, obviously. Premiership. Let me just get it up.
Come on, Phil. It's been so smooth until now.
I know, sorry. I know you don't want to do any editing.
No, none. I don't want to do it. I'm incapable of doing it.
I know you're too much like Sebastian Bezzi to do any editing.
Exactly right.
So, Friday night, this will be an interesting game. Harlequins host Bath. So, both teams very poor form. Both teams losing players.
We've seen this game live in the flesh before without international players, and Harlequins won comfortably.
That's very, very true. We were there for the World Cup final when this was played in Bath.
I'm going to say Harlequins win again.
Now, Harlequins have lost Nick Easter since then. And on that day, they had Tim Viss, who was playing very well, who presumably will be called up to Scotland.
Yes, true.
So I'm actually going to say Bath, even though they've been very poor form, I think Harlequins are really struggling. And watching, like, they're 9-10. They started with Tito Tibaldi and Ben Botica controlling
Tibaldi
the game.
Tibaldi is a surprisingly good... sounds awful. He's a good player.
He's okay. Yeah. He's okay, but...
Danny Kerr's a much better player.
The drop-off from Danny Kerr and Nick Evans to Tito Tibaldi and Ben Botica is enormous.
Poor old Ben Botica.
Yes.
And sandwiched between his dad and Nick Evans. Two All Black legends. And then there's Ben.
Do you reckon they give him loads of crap all the time?
His phone is full of texts from his dad and from Nick Evans. In fact, apparently they've got a WhatsApp group, just the three of them. And they just bombard him with banter.
Poor Ben Botica. He's not in great shape as well at the moment.
No, he's not, is he?
I'm going for Bath.
Okay, fair enough. Next one.
Next one.
Shall I do my team impression now? Hurry up. Come on. Next one. Who's it?
Next one. Wasps. Host Leicester.
Okay, Wasps don't need to talk about that much. That much more. Next one. So why Wasps? You've not even picked Wasps. I assumed you had.
I am going to say Wasps.
Okay.
Leicester did play well at times during that game.
So we've done this podcast before.
It is almost as if we have done this podcast before. But I'm going to go for Wasps because when their big players are firing, Nathan Hughes, Christian Wade, Charles Piatow, they are virtually unstoppable, as Toulon found out.
Yep, rightly so. I think you're right there.
Northampton Sale Sharks.
Sale Sharks for me, please.
Sale Sharks away.
Yeah, I believe so.
They're a different prospect at home.
Here's my thinking. They've done things the right way. They've got a solid set piece. They've got a great pack of forwards. And now they're adding the final ingredients, which is the pace in the backs and a bit of back play. So, yes, Sale Sharks.
Yeah, Addison and Sam James did look good.
Sam James, great talent.
Stringer as well. Stringer came off the bench.
Strings.
He's still in good shape.
Yeah.
You can see, I mean, he's only tiny, he's not massive, but you can see every sinew on his arms and legs.
He doesn't need to be in great shape, that's the thing, but he is.
He's in superb shape. As is Mujati, obviously.
You need to get him in the dungeon sooner rather than later.
And Ostrakov is enormous.
Bigger than me?
Yes.
What?
He's 6'7 and 19 stone.
So about the same size?
It's roughly similar.
Okay.
Roughly similar. But I'm going to go with Northampton. I think they're actually playing some good rugby at the moment.
Fair enough. Exeter, Newcastle?
Exeter, one-way traffic.
Okay, Worcester, Gloucester.
This is interesting.
Isn't it?
I think Gloucester are on a real good run of form. They're playing some nice rugby. They're not losing a huge number of players. They'll lose Laidlaw. And
well, Dean Ryan playing his old club.
Yeah.
Lots of ex-Gloucestermen in Worcester's team. Well, yep. Lots, maybe one or two. Who knows? I'm gonna say Gloucester, but tighter than you think.
And then 8 p.m. UK time, which is 3 p.m.
Yeah.
3 p.m.
Yeah, that makes
US
sense.
Time or East Coast time. London Irish host Saracens at the Red Bull Arena in New Jersey.
I'd be amazed if we make this. I'm going to be literally be amazed if we get there.
We will definitely be there.
Oh,
we're accredited media professionals. We can't get that drunk.
Tim would be devastated if we didn't make it. I mean, like, he's going to be... I don't want to disappoint him. That's the thing.
No,
he won't be angry. He'll be disappointed.
We'll be okay. We will be there. Don't you worry about that. We will be there. Now, do you see... Can you give me a scenario that would set up anything other than a Saracens victory?
Can I? So, let's have a think about this. No, I'm afraid. I'm really digging deep. Okay, maybe London Irish get a really early try. A really early try somehow. And then it rains like it's never rained before. Like, the heavens open up. It's a massive leveller. London Irish using Joffrey Claws.
Yeah.
Put it up and under every time, just like Argentina in previous World Cups. They can test for it. Nothing happens. And they win by 2 points.
And Saracens, they've predicted sunshine. So they've only brought their moulded studs. So they're sliding around like they're on an ice rink.
Oh. And also, one of the up and unders, Goode clatters into someone taking
Goode?
A high ball.
Oh,
Alex.
He won't be there.
Okay.
He'll be with England.
So, fine. So Ben Ransom clatters into someone. Red card.
Red. Okay. Now you're talking.
Now we're talking. They're trying to get back into the game. Ruck time, Shout Brits, smiling away, decides to knock someone unconscious, red card.
So smiley,
so smiley, so violent.
Yes, I can see now.
Just like an ex-lover.
Now I can see.
So that's how I don't see it going, but that's the only scenario I can see. What do you think the score's going to be? Give me a score.
37-14 to Saracens.
Fantastic. Well,
put money on it. Take it to the bank.
Take it to the bank. Well, thank you very much.
Well, one final game. Sorry. Apologies. I'm getting confused.
How dare you? I had a segue all lined up, but I won't use it now.
You've used enough segues for one day, Jay.
So next time you hear us, we'll be joining our friend Tim in New York. We'll be hopefully having a podcast out there. We might have a guest. We might not have a guest. We'll definitely have some sound clips, some interviews. But until then, I have been the Sebastian Beze of rugby podcasting. So goodbye from me and...
Goodbye from me as well, I guess.
I think that's how he ends it, doesn't he, Tim?
Yeah, something. I just normally switch off when Tim's doing his stuff.
Yeah,
he's good at it, and we see it so frequently that we can just kind of relax.
Yeah, if you ever doubted his value, today would be the time to reconsider. So we'll speak to you next time from NYC. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.